Good morning. As we approach, as we enter the last Shabbat of the year, of the Hebrew calendar, this Shabbat, I thought I'd like to say a few words about the task, if you will, of the 10 days that we're going to be experiencing. So first of all, I'd like to start with just an overview in a very cursory way of different views of human nature. And the question I'm going to ask is there really possibility for change? Or not, you know. So the four basic views, if you know a little bit about the philosophy, is one that that human nature is innately evil and immoral, or the other view, innately good and a self-sacrificing nature, or the third, tabula rasa, which you probably all have heard of, existence precedes essence, and innately, and then the last one, which is that human nature is innately good and in essence in harmony with the divine. So theory one states that human nature is basically evil or at least amoral, and psychologically this view is represented by classical id, the id by Freud, and love thy neighbor as thyself is justified only by the fact that nothing else runs so strongly counter to the original nature of man. Genesis and Bereshit, after the flood, God says the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, never again will I curse the ground because of humans, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood, and never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done. That's chapter 8, verse 21. Therefore, to a certain degree, humans at their very core are not able to control themselves and deserve God's compassion. The second theory, of course, states that people are innately good and self-actualizing, and psychologically this view is represented by ego psychology, client-centered therapy, humanistic psychology, transpersonal, and the individual's basic need is to strive towards personal positive growth, and the organism has one basic tendency to actualize the experience of that organism. Theory three includes the blank slate or tabula rasa view. It is the most extreme form. It's argued by radical behaviorists or the philosopher John Locke, and it suggests that people are neither good nor bad.
Something went wrong. Please try again.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm getting something on my phone. Theory four states that people are self-actualizing innate creatures that are not only personal, but also reflect a divine cosmic or transpersonal spark intrinsic to everyone. So obviously you've got enough choices to decide how you understand human nature, and I'm sure you might add one or two. Well, the Yamim Noraim, the awesome days between this Wednesday night and Yom Kippur, Nora in Hebrew has a vast array of meanings. There's always room for you to give it your own meaning. Well, Nora can be awesome. As Jacob awakens from his dream of a stairway to heaven, he says, "Ma nora hamakom hazeh v'ani lo yodati." How amazing is this place? The hamakom, also a name for God, is this place. I didn't know. But nora can also denote fear and trembling. But I like the former definition. Nora v'ayom, for instance, in modern Hebrew, is horrible and very, very devastating. Now, our tradition has it that for 30 days before this Wednesday night, we begin to seriously try to make amends with our family, friends, and neighbors. And amidst the daily blowing of the shofar's magical notes, we ask for and also dispense forgiveness and being forgiven. Asking for forgiveness and being forgiven is the tshuva bein adam l'chavero, one to another. And for the whole month, we've been saying Shana Tova as a hopeful and joyous greeting. Yes, it means have a good year, but Shana Tova is also cheering us on to a period of self-forgiveness. Shana Tova can also be understood based on its Hebrew roots as have a good change. It is a lot of work, but if you take it seriously, we will need each other, we need to help each other in the best ways we can. The classic schema distilled for us by Maimonides in Chilchot Tshuva has four steps. First, to feel regret. And then secondly, I think this is very important, especially those of us who try to get people to deal with their true emotions, is to articulate the trespasses. It's called vidui, or confession. And then to suffer more remorse. Remorse is always positive in this sense. And then work on, and this is probably the toughest thing at all, work on not falling into the same traps we set up for ourselves at the time of the transgression. And the proof of the pudding is resisting the behavior if the same situation arises. Now, this desired avoidance of recidivism is not possible if we don't work our ways through the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, 10 days of tshuva. Tshuva can be understood as return, but it's also used most often in Hebrew as a response. What are we responding to? What is the question? Perhaps it's the one asked of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, Ayeka, where are you? This question and our response, our tshuva, will determine much of the process of self-acceptance. It lays the basis of Adam leMakom, between our own selves and the One, the Makom, the spaciousness of the universe. And we are all small particles in that vastness beyond our comprehension. Now, this spaciousness is created within ourselves. And in that expansion of spirit, we can break it down to see what prevents our struggle to self-forgiveness. The spaciousness can be created within ourselves, and in that we can really enter into the true struggle with tshuva. As Rabbi Soloveitchik says, tshuva should offer a path to becoming a new person. In Halachic Man, Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik suggests that tshuva, usually translated as repentance, is not to be narrowly defined as turning from sin. Rather, tshuva prompts us to reconsider all our habits and routines, including those that are not necessarily sinful. So doing tshuva is really an expression of our capacity for self-creation and identifying and realizing our own potential. The goal is to attain our individuality, autonomy, uniqueness, and freedom. Self-forgiveness is hard, and it might take years to do. And going through the process is in itself comforting and arousing. The need that is articulated in our communal hymns, our litanies of transgression, the A to Z list that starts with Hashamnu and the Al Chetz and Yom Kippur. We are all creatures seeking self-awareness, and a part of that is self-acceptance. We will be reborn after the shofar blast, after the Ne'ilah, and then we prepare for a marvelous holiday of Sukkot. The process of tshuva always ends in joy. Admittedly, it might take a while, but the payoff will have you continue to have a shana tova, a good change every year you try. Excuse me. The tshuva called here is work on accepting ourselves. The idea of self, despite all the difficulties associated with it, how do I go deeply inside oneself and get ready, if you will, to die? To die to what all what was, to die to what has sort of been set up by ourselves, our illusions. How do we get that to die? In being ready to die, we start making amends with ourselves. Can experiencing death of Yom Kippur serve as an incentive for keeping up the process of change? So the awesome days begin in both joy, staying alive to see another Yamim Noraim. Wow, that's pretty cool, right? I'm alive, and I'm here. I made it. And the apprehension of what we have to do to get to our next year. Every year we make resolutions of change. Every year, communities rally together to support those working for self-forgiveness. Self-acceptance, as we say, can help us die serenely to accept the mystery of death and beyond. And coming back to this process every year keeps the machinery lubricated. Pardon me. There is a many times told story, a tale of a Hasidic rabbi called Rabbi Zushia. Zushi was a timid man, a man who lived a humble life. And one day, Zushi stood before his congregation and he said, "I'm afraid," said Zushi, "because when I go to heaven, I know God's not going to ask me, why weren't you like Moses? Why weren't you more like King David? I'm afraid God will ask Zushi, why weren't you more like Zushi?" And the Yamim Noraim, these awesome days, provides an opportunity to be more of our true selves. I'm somewhat confident that for most of us, when we discover and rediscover ourselves, we'll also rediscover our capacity for compassion. Our practice of silence contemplation offers us an invitation to experience what is presented to our senses, but there is more. Our realization that all is constantly changing is true of ourselves and all those around us. It is our being part of the natural world, not apart from it, as so many assume. So where are you? It's the first question asked in the Torah. For both a psychological and spiritual protective, it is one of the most pivotal and profound questions that we can be asked. An opportunity for assessing and evaluating where one is on the journey of transformation. Alan Kasdan, who is at the Child Study Center at Yale, says all psychotherapeutic schools have a means for assessing where an individual is. And that assessment is not context-free, but rather grows out of and is based on the dimensions which have previously discussed, the view of human nature, the goal of the journey, the impediments to the journey. Each type of assessment will be particular to the belief system espoused by that approach. For example, in Theory 1 of the nature of human nature, classical id psychology, Sigmund Freud believed that individuals, because of defenses, repression, and self-deception, would have a great deal of difficulty honestly assessing where they are. So just a few things. I found a wonderful quote from a wonderful rabbi, a writer, and author. Some of you may know the name, Chaim Potok, P-O-T-O-K. He says, I do not pretend to understand the mystery of human transformation. The moment when the response of a man to the world about him throws upon his mind a new and wondrous light concerning the nature of our species and binds him to a vision of the future to which he gives over his life. So, the Baal Shem Tov said, every man should know that since creation, every human should know that since creation, no other human ever was like him or her. Each is called on to perfect his unique qualities. And it is this failure to heed this call which delays the Messiah. Arya Kaplan, the great pioneer in Jewish meditation, said, the Shema is addressing Israel in each of us. And this Israel is the part of us that yearns to transcend the boundaries of the physical world and seek out the spiritual. The Shema tells this Israel to listen, to quiet down the mind completely, and open it up to a universal message of God's unity. So we wish ourselves, and I wish all of you, a good change. And of course, there's a lot to discuss. And I'll open it up for conversation now. And again, pardon my cold. It's been quite rough. And hopefully by the time Rosh Hashanah comes, I will be on the mend. So let's open it up. We can stop the recording for when we do that. And let's get to work a little bit about helping each other in this process of change. I still see the meeting is being recorded. Is that the fact?
Yes. I believe that Reggie has.
We can stop that recording now, correct?
Yes, when Reggie stops it.
Great. Okay. So here we are, changing every moment and trying to basically recalibrate ourselves.
Stop it, because you're co-host. Why don't you just stop it?
Okay. I can stop it, you mean?
Yes, you're a co-host.
Wow, that's great. I didn't realize I was co-host. That's really nice. Stop recording. Okay, how do you stop recording? That's the question. You made the co-host the wrong person, basically. Okay, that should be it. Okay, stop. You know what I press, Bobby, in order to do that?
Do you have anything on the top bar that says It,
I have a picture of a camera saying this meeting is being recorded.
okay. Do you have anything on the top bar that says it has like a stop thing?
Yes, I think